Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by Andrew Schlecht with Alex Spears.
How about we can just watch basketball?
That's a man's jam!
I like that idea.
Live from Oklahoma.
Quick clip!
With questions and participants from all around the world.
Anthony Edwards!
Put that on a poster!
Whether you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee, get ready, sit back, relax. It's the Saturday Slammin' Jam.
Fact is, I missed this shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
Here's Andrew.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. Go to theathletic.com/NBA show and get The Athletic for half off right now. You better go do that quick. Do it quick because there's still lots of great content out there. There's Ben Simmons rumors out there. It's actually a really nice roundtable piece that was released on Thursday that you should all go read. Go check that out. Right now, I've got my friend Alex Spears with me. Alex, tell us, what's piquing your interest here at the beginning of September in the NBA?
Yeah, Andrew, you know, we've reached the part of the offseason where some NBA fans out there, they might have begun to tune out a little bit. You know, football's starting. They may be finding other things to do with their time. Sure, we have the ongoing Ben Simmons drama, but beyond that, we are firmly in the least interesting part of the offseason. Yep. Now, this is like the part of the offseason where you would get worked up over NBA 2K ratings just to feel something. And usually during the season, I would spend this opening segment talking about the most interesting thing that happened this week. But I can't lie to the listeners, Andrew. There's nothing that interesting going on right now. And so I have compiled a list of the top five most mildly interesting off-season nuggets. These are nuggets of information, Andrew. They're not deserving of their own segment, but collectively, they make for a mildly interesting list. And I've put them in a top five list to get you more excited. The order means absolutely nothing, but we're going to count them down. The top five most mildly interesting offseason nuggets, starting with number five, hashtag height watch. Now, we're all familiar with hashtag muscle watch, of course, the time of the offseason when we begin to hear reports that this guy or that guy has added 10 pounds of pure muscle in the offseason. It's an annual tradition, which may or may not ultimately mean anything. Height watch, however, is a different beast, I would argue. Because once you grow, Andrew, it's unlikely you'll be shrinking back down in the near future.
True.
Would you agree?
Agree.
Good. Having a random growth spurt once you're already in the league is one of the more legitimately fun stories that can happen to one of your favorite young players because it just raises their ceiling. And we've had famous examples like Paul George growing 2 inches or Giannis growing several inches once they enter the league. And this summer, we have two main candidates for Height Watch. First, Anthony Edwards. Timberwolves head coach Chris Finch told reporters that Edwards has grown from 6'4 to 6'6 since the Wolves drafted him. That's mildly interesting, I would say. One of the more powerful, explosive athletes in the league. Growing 2 inches seems like a pretty big deal. And then there's Darius Garland, who is typically listed around 6'1". There is a segment of Cavs fans on Twitter, however, who have been dissecting off-season photos of Garland standing next to other NBA players comparing their listed heights. And based on those analyses, Andrew, some Cavs fans have come to the conclusion that Darius Garland has grown. And that would also be a pretty big deal because one of the knocks against Garland is that he's a little undersized. And so if he grew to 6'3 or something, that'd be a significant development. It is just speculation, though. Chris Manning of Locked On Cavs asked Garland directly about the rumors of Height Watch and whether he had grown, to which Garland responded, "I hope." Doesn't get much more mildly interesting than that, wouldn't you say?
I hope.
I hope. Okay.
I can attest that I have done the height watch thing myself. You know, I got to be at Summer League.
It's
and
way
see,
cooler than muscle watch.
Yes. I mean, just the fact that, like, Josh Giddey standing next to, like, Poku, I'm like, he's definitely not 6'7". He's probably closer to 6'9", maybe even 6'10". Who knows?
Changes things. Now, number four, most mildly interesting offseason nugget, retired numbers. So it was announced this week that the Memphis Grizzlies will be retiring both Tony Allen's number 9 and Zach Randolph's number 50 this upcoming season. Well-deserved. They're the first two players who have their numbers retired by the Grizzlies, which now leaves only two NBA franchises with zero retired numbers. Do you have any guesses, or do you know, Andrew, off the top of your head, what they are?
I actually don't know.
It is the Toronto Raptors and the Los Angeles Clippers. They're the two remaining franchises with no retired numbers. Mildly interesting, wouldn't you say? The Raptors already have plans. Raptors chairman Larry Tannenbaum told The Athletic that Kyle Lowry, when he retires, will be the first Raptor to have his number retired by the franchise. So they're prepared. Yeah. What about the Clippers? Well, the Clippers are an interesting one because even among the fan base, there's not a strong consensus about whose number should be retired first. Legendary Clippers announcer Ralph Lawler gave his picks last summer, tweeting that Elton Brand, Danny Manning, World Be Free, Terry Cummings, and Bob McAdoo should all have their numbers retired. Mildly interesting to note that only one of those players, Elton Brand, played more than 400 games for the Clippers.
Wow.
Now, that's kind of surprising.
It is wild.
Doc Rivers has previously stated that he believes DeAndre Jordan, the all-time franchise leader in games played for the Clippers, should be the first jersey retired, which is kind of weird. Then, of course, there's Blake Griffin, a player who changed the franchise, inarguably. Yeah. He was tabbed a Clipper for life, but who was unceremoniously traded shortly after signing a max contract extension. That might be weird. Maybe it should be Chris Paul. I guess the mildly interesting part of all this is that for a franchise that has been around for over 50 years, it's kind of difficult to find the perfect candidate to be the first jersey retired in Clippers history.
Yeah.
Luckily, they're unlikely to have to do anything because they're going to move into a new arena, so they'll probably wait until that is, until their new arena anyways.
Yeah.
So Ballmer has a few more years to think about it. But hey, mildly interesting.
I kind of agree with the stance that, like, I don't know that any of these guys deserve it. Yeah.
That's how you think they should just wait. Let's see how long Kawhi stays there, and maybe Kawhi will be the first one.
Yeah. Or maybe Paul George is number one. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Number three, most mildly interesting offseason nugget, predicting early season storylines with schedule analysis. So Owen Phillips at Owen LHJ Phillips on Twitter. He writes a weekly newsletter about the NBA, which I would highly recommend, called the F5. And in those newsletters, Owen uses his insane data visualization skills in R, the statistics program, to create graphs and charts about random NBA topics. And this past week, Owen charted every team's strength of schedule based on their opponent's projected wins from Vegas. And by doing this, try to identify some teams that have a really hard or conversely really easy start to the season, and knowing that, maybe try to predict some of the early season storylines. So for example, two teams with two of the easiest early season schedules in the league are the title favorites, the Nets and the Lakers. The Lakers, for instance, in their first nine games, they play the Thunder twice, the Rockets twice, the Spurs and the Cavs. Now, this is good news if you're a Russell Westbrook stan and you're worried about Lakers fans turning on him the second the team hits a rough patch. At least for the first month, the much more likely storyline is going to be about how Russ has transformed the Lakers and gotten them off to the best start in years. That's exciting for Russ fans. On the flip side, however, there are a few teams with a really difficult opening slate of games, which might influence their early season narratives. And there was one team that stood out in this respect, a team with a lot riding on this season after their offseason moves, and that is last week's Wheel of Fandom team, the Chicago Bulls. After a few games against the Pistons and some other mediocre teams, the Bulls have an early season stretch that goes Knicks, Jazz, Celtics, Sixers, Nets, Mavs, Warriors, Clippers, Lakers, Blazers, Nuggets, Knicks. For an Eastern Conference team looking to establish themselves as a playoff team early, that is a pretty brutal opening schedule. And in my opinion, mildly interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. You got something to say, Andrew?
I got nothing to say, man. I'm just
you're worried about the Bulls, aren't you?
I'm just only mildly interested. I am. Maybe they're not back at all. Maybe that's just...
This might be confirming your prior biases against the Bulls.
True.
Knowing that they have a rough schedule. We'll see what happens. Hey, number two, most mildly interesting offseason nugget, longest tenured players. So I stumbled across a Hoops Hype article listing who all the longest tenured players are for each NBA team.
Mm.
This is the definition of mildly interesting. I was just scrolling through the list going, huh, every couple seconds. Oh. Now, there's some obvious ones, Giannis on the Bucks, Steph for the Warriors. But there's a lot of mildly interesting ones. So I thought it'd be fun to choose five of the random teams and see how many you can get correct, Andrew.
Ooh.
So I'm going to give you a team. You tell me who their longest tenured player is, okay?
Okay.
First up, the Atlanta Hawks. Who has been on the Hawks the longest?
Is it John Collins?
It's John Collins. Isn't that weird?
It's weird.
All right, next one. Charlotte Hornets.
Is it Scary
Cody
Terry?
Cody Zeller recently left. It is not. It is Miles Bridges, though.
Really? Wow.
Feels like he's just been in the league. What about Orlando Magic?
Oh, my.
Now, this I think this might be the easiest one, if you think about it.
Isaac?
It is Terrence Ross.
Terrence Ross.
Because he's been there back since the Ibaka trade.
Yeah.
A few years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
What about Los Angeles Clippers?
Oh, it's not Zubac, is it?
Yes, it is.
It is.
Yes, it is. And the final one, our Wheel of Fandom team this week, the New York Knicks. Who's been on the Knicks the longest?
Oh, boy.
Any guesses?
Is it Kevin Knox?
It's Kevin Knox.
Yes.
Kevin Knox has been with the Knicks the longest. Wouldn't you say that was pretty kind of interesting? Sort of interesting?
I'm only kind of interested in the fact that he's the longest tenured Knick, and it feels like he's always felt like he was going to be traded at some point, but, you know, he's just kind of sticking around, being the longest tenured Knick. It's weird.
It's one of those facts. You hear it, and you're surprised. You immediately forget it 5 seconds later, because who cares? Okay, finally, Andrew, we've reached the number one most mildly interesting offseason nugget, and it is the luxury tax. So this comes from Yossi Goslin at Hoops Hype. Did you know that as things currently stand, the upcoming NBA season will have the largest luxury tax payments ever? Yossi describes the situation in his article. There are currently 10 teams over the luxury tax threshold. Three of them, Boston, Portland, and Toronto, are barely above it, so they can get under it pretty easily. But the remaining seven, which are Brooklyn, Golden State, the Clippers, Lakers, Bucks, Sixers, Jazz, they are currently projected to pay a total of $544 million in luxury tax payments. Half a billion. To put that in perspective, the previous high for largest luxury tax payments in a season was 2002-2003, when teams paid $173.3 million.
Whoa.
So you're like tripling it. The Warriors on their own are currently projected to pay $184 million in luxury tax payments. More than the league has ever spent as a whole, they're doing it in one season. Wow. And that half a billion gets redistributed to the teams below the luxury tax, which means for those teams on the edge, like Boston, Portland, and Toronto, getting below the tax during the season is the difference between having to pay a little bit into that half a billion or getting an extra $11.9 million from the luxury tax distribution. That's the current projection for what teams below the tax will get. And when you think about these past two seasons, the losses related to COVID and fans not being in the arenas, that's a pretty huge amount of money to receive for free. You just get it. And if this type of spending continues among the top teams, there's going to be a massive incentive to not spend for teams at the bottom. Like that incentive will only increase, which I would say is pretty mildly interesting. Maybe even bordering on honest to God interesting, Andrew.
Yeah, that really is significant. And obviously my mind goes to the Thunder, who had been paying into the luxury tax for years and years and had wanted to compete for years. And now they've hit this point where it's like, okay, well, we're not going to be an expensive team for a little while. It's kind of the perfect time to not be an expensive team because you actually get a check at the end of the year for not being expensive. So it is mildly interesting. I'm not fully interested, not fully invested in that idea, but at least like,
well, if you think about it, because I honestly assume the number would be higher that teams would be getting.
Yeah.
Which makes me realize like in the past, they were probably only getting a couple million, but like 11.9 million, especially for these teams like Boston or Portland, who, you know, are bordering on the tax, to be able to get like enough money to pay for 1 year of an MLE contract, that's pretty wild.
Yeah.
And all they have to do is just get a little bit below the tax to do it. So anyways, that brings us to the end of the top five most mildly interesting offseason nuggets.
Wow. I'm mildly interested. I'm kind of excited.
Hell yes.
Al, for my interesting thing this week, I thought I'd talk about breakout candidates. It's always about the time where you start hearing about who's breaking out, who's going to have a big spot in the rotation. So I thought I would take a look at some players. I've got six players on my list. And we start with like a pretty prominent guy, and then we're going to some deep cuts, Al. So as we go on, the cuts are going to get deeper and deeper. And there's maybe a guy at the end here that you're like, who are you talking about? Did you make this guy up?
Very exciting. What a tease.
Okay, just get ready. Michael Porter Jr. is my number one breakout candidate.
Oh, one, yeah.
It's about opportunity for him. And the forward rotation, you take a look at it, Aaron Gordon, Jamichael Green, Jeff Green, these are all like very complimentary players to him in the forward rotation, like guys that aren't going to be taking shots from him. You have the absence of Jamal Murray to start the season. And then you take a look at what he did pre and post All-Star break last season. And like, just to remind people, like Jamal Murray didn't get hurt until April 12th. So he had a little while post All-Star break too, to have these stats with Jamal in the lineup. So pre All-Star break, 14 points, 7 boards, and then 0.9 assists per game on 50, 40, 75 shooting. Post All-Star break, 22 points, 7.5 boards, 1.3 assists on 56, 46, 80. He was 68% true shooting in the second half of the season. Just absolutely insane. And in a large stretch, this isn't one just like a 5-game segment. Like, this was a large sample size. So to me, with the opportunity that he has and the shots that they're going to need him to take, and now like Paul Millsap's not even there, like completely gone. You have these new guys coming in the rotation. I think that this is prime for Michael Porter Jr. to just break out and become a star. And like those shooting splits, if he can, I mean, you don't even have to replicate those. Like, even if it was just like 52-42, but he's 56-46 last year from the field and from three. I mean, that is absolutely crazy. So Michael Porter Jr. To me is going, if he just gets more shots, like look for this guy to be averaging like 25-26 points per game. And then once you do that, it's like, oh, okay, that's when you get in the All-Star conversation. And so the Nuggets may have two All-Stars next year. And I think people always thought it would be Jamal Murray as a second star. But, you know, watch out for MPJ because I think he's coming.
And that type of jump, I mean, we were talking about it on Down to Dunk about Most Improved Player Award. But if he did make a jump from like 19 to 25 points per game, like that is the type of thing that gets you notice for that award. And he has an amazing opportunity for that.
Yep. Next breakout candidate. Nikhil Alexander-Walker. It's a deeper cut than MPJ. Nikhil Alexander-Walker, I think, is going to have a chance to be one of the mainstays in this rotation. I mean, if you look at the guys that they have in place, there's no more Lonzo, so they really need like a mainstay guard there. Like, are you counting on Kyra Lewis to take that spot? I mean, I'm really not. Devontae Graham is obviously going to play a lot. I think Thomas Satoransky is like a nice bench guard. Josh Hart is there, but Josh Hart can even play like some forward minutes, and then like Garrett Temple. And of course, to me, if you're the Pelicans, like you're going to want to give Nikhil every opportunity to earn that spot. And they did that the second half of last season. You know, he went from 8 points per game pre-All-Star break to 15.4 points per game post-All-Star break. And he was a better shooter post-All-Star break too. He was 38% from three. So if you're getting a guy who can shoot 38% from three, and honestly, like they just need somebody at the guard position to pop. I think they hope it's Devontae Graham, but I think Nikhil is a guy that can really do everything. He can handle, he can distribute, he can do lots of things. So to me, I'm looking at Nikhil as a guy that if the Pelicans are able to make some kind of leap, I think that they're not only counting on this Devontae Graham piece to really fit, but I think that they need Alexander Walker to continue to shoot well and then be kind of an auxiliary piece for Zion.
Yeah, if I was an optimistic Pelicans fan and had a podcast, right now I'd be trying to spin their offseason by saying, hey, I just think that they're really confident in these young guys. Like, they just want to give minutes to Nikhil Alexander Walker. They want to give minutes to Kyra Lewis Jr. Because those guys last year, I think a lot of fans with or a lot of Pelicans fans wanted those guys playing over someone like Eric Bledsoe, who was just never a good fit on that team. So I'm like cautiously optimistic about the Pelicans in spite of how bad their offseason has seemed from the outside.
Yeah, I mean, they need internal development. I think they're counting on a couple things. I think they're counting on internal development and just a better fit overall there.
Right.
And then Jonas is an upgrade. Like, he just flat out
for
is,
sure.
Mostly because of injury issues to Steven Adams. Okay, my third breakout player, Al, Jordan Poole. from the Warriors. I think he's got the trust of the organization. And you think about the guys he's competing against, like Damian Lee, like Klay Thompson when he comes back, Andre Iguodala, Michael Mulder. You have the rookies. You have Moses Moody, who probably kind of plays, you know, could play a guard position. But none of those guys create for themselves. And that's the thing that Jordan Poole has over all these guys. Not only do I think the team trusts him, but I think that he's, outside of Steph, he's really their only offensive creator. And so they need him to take on a bigger role. If you take a look at the Warriors' depth chart, like, everybody's really excited about this team, and they're so dependent on Klay. Like, the secret is, like, man, they're not any deeper than they were last year, really. Like, you bring Iggy back, and you get Klay. Like, Klay is, like, the big piece. If Klay doesn't work out, they're, like, the same team as last year, but now they're younger. And so they need guys like Jordan Poole to step up. And Jordan Poole did that at the end of last season. You look at his last six games, which they went on a six-game winning streak. These are his scoring totals. 14, 16, 20, 20, 38, 15. I mean, he was contributing in a really big way to this team. And they continue to trust him throughout the season. He's a pretty good shooter. I think he finished around 35% from three. Fine. But 14 points per game, and he was a positive on the floor for them. I think they really need Jordan Poole to step up. I think that he's low-key like one of the most important players on this Warriors team.
Yeah, I think that given their financial constraints, they did a good job by bringing back Iggy and Otto Porter, two veterans who can just kind of play a similar role like that Juan Toscano-Anderson played last year, just like a smart player on the court. But you still need some more offensive firepower, and I think that's what you're getting at with Poole. And following Warriors Twitter, like, they are so high on Poole. And he's one of those guys that I feel like for the casual NBA fan, they just haven't thought about him that much because his breakout was really over the second part of last season. So, yeah, I'm very excited to see what he does.
Yeah, the Porter addition is interesting. He just has to be healthy, like, just flat out. And he just hasn't really been able to showcase that. Okay, next player, another deep cut, a guy that I've talked about on this podcast before, but I really do believe that he's going to have a chance to break out this year, and that's DeAnthony Melton. Last season, he was about 60% true shooting before the All-Star break and didn't have as much of an opportunity because Grayson Allen was in the way in the rotation. Now Grayson Allen's been traded. I think they're making way for DeAnthony Melton. Not only did he shoot the ball really well last season, he was 41% from three last season on over 200 attempts. It's like enough of a sample size to show that like he's a pretty good shooter. But he's a great defender too. Like he's a really nice point of attack defender to play next to Ja. And so to me, it's the perfect pairing. And I didn't quite understand why they didn't play him enough, and now the front office has kind of taken away the option of starting Grayson Allen. And I don't know that they'll start DeAnthony Melton next to Ja, but I do think that he's going to play a lot because you look at their depth. I mean, they just didn't add any guards. They took away Grayson Allen, and they didn't really add any significant guard pieces back. And so Melton's a guy that can get into the teeth of the defense. He's a guy that's got some stuff off the dribble too. So to me, he's well worth a large slot in the rotation for development. And then I just think he helps. I think he was the sixth best player in plus minus on off differential last season for the Grizzlies. So he's helpful. He's good. He's 22 years old. I mean, there's just no reason that you shouldn't develop this guy alongside DeAnthony Melton. And it looks like the offseason moves that they've made are making way for him to be that.
Yeah, I talked about it 2 weeks ago. That was one of the reasons why I liked their summer moves so much, because it did seem that like they were skewing younger. And you look at some of these lineups that hopefully they'll be playing with guys like DeAnthony Melton or with their rookie Zaire Williams, and also giving way more minutes to Jaren Jackson Jr., hopefully, if he's healthy. It's just those lineups just have such a higher long-term ceiling. They're so much more exciting for me as like an observer of the Memphis Grizzlies, them going a little bit younger than they were previously.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going a little deeper, Al. Alexei Pokuševski for the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Oh, that's not that deep, Andrew. We talk about Poku all the time.
It's kind of, I guess it's not that deep of a cut, but
everyone knows Poku.
Yeah, he's going to have, the thing about Poku that he's going to have this year is just tremendous opportunity. I think that they held him out of summer league so that they could keep him on this plan for development and so he could get stronger. And I think they're going to give him every single opportunity this season to showcase what he can do, to be successful, to fail, to do whatever it is he's going to do. I think he will be given every single opportunity. And so the shooting got better as the season went on. His ability to create got so much better. I remember the season started, and Poku couldn't even get into the teeth of the defense without having the ball stripped. But he was starting to figure that out as the season went on, how to use screens better, how to navigate an NBA defense. He was figuring that kind of stuff out, where he was making better passes, he was taking better shots, he was getting to spots that he felt comfortable with. And so he has basically just been working out and working on his game this whole time. He's been back in Oklahoma City for a long stretch of time and plans to continue to work out. And like, this dude, all he cares about is basketball. Like, that's it. And so I'm really interested to see what he looks like coming into next season. I think that it's still going to take some time and could even take years to see what he is, because he is very far away from being a finished product. But to me, I think that he's going to have the opportunity to be like the second scorer on this really bad Thunder team. And I think they're going to give him as many shots as he wants.
Yeah, it's always good to remember that he is still not 20. He's still 19 years old.
Yeah.
And after this season, like, no matter what happens, good or bad, we're going to have one of the greatest like season-long highlight videos for any player in the league. Because you just know, like, the stuff that he did in the G League bubble last year with Moses Brown, like a couple of those passes, if we see that in the NBA, like that level of skill, I mean, it's just going to be a ton of fun.
Yep. All right, my last one. A guy that super deep cut, unless you're a huge summer league head, ooh, you might not know who this guy is. Jalen Noel from the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Okay.
So this may be filed under only mildly interesting as well. Maybe this whole podcast is only mildly interesting. Jalen Noel is a guard. He can handle. He's got some juice off the dribble. He has shown the ability to shoot the basketball. And then also, I just think that there's going to be a slot for him to grab minutes in Minnesota. You know, last season, they still had the Jarrett Culver slot, right? Where it's like, right, okay, Jarrett Culver, we have to see what he can do. Like, this is it. Like, we have to figure out if he does anything. Now that slot is gone. And they also have a lot of guards that have struggled with injury issues. I mean, how many games did they play with D'Angelo Russell, Malik Beasley, and Anthony Edwards? Was it like three or like six? I can't remember. It was very, very low. And so to me, you have that. Patrick Beverley is also on their team now, who also misses a ton of games. I think there's going to be minutes there for Jalen Noel. And I can see him coming into games and just filling it up. Now, once their rotation got, you know, cemented toward the end of the season, he didn't really play a whole lot. If you go back and look at some box scores, like, Jalen Noel's doing some stuff for the Timberwolves. And so to me, I think that he's a guy that is not necessarily going to break out, but he may be a guy that by the end of the season, like, okay, like, he deserves some rotation minutes for the Timberwolves. So that's my deepest cut, and possibly not even breaking up, possibly just a guy waving the towel at the end of the season. But I watched him at Summer League, and there's something there with him. I think that he's a really interesting scorer from the wing.
Wow. Well, that you teased it, Andrew, and it was absolutely true. Very deep cut. Would have never seen that coming. It is now time to celebrate some birthdays.
Blow out the candles, get your cake, and eat it too. It's the birthday bash.
It's your birthday.
Somebody in here, it's your birthday.
It's your birthday.
Somebody in here, it's your birthday.
It's your birthday.
Everybody move like it's your birthday.
So I had 2 weeks of birthdays to go through, so a lot of options. So I'm going to give you two guys' names. They both had birthdays in the last 2 weeks. You're going to tell me which guy is older. First up, Charlie Villanueva, David West.
Oh,
that's a good, that's a good matchup.
David West is older.
David West turning 41. Charlie Villanueva, 37. You are correct. What about one of your favorites, Jalen Brunson? Brandon Ingram.
Ooh. Brunson's older.
He is. Jalen Brunson turning 25. Brandon Ingram just turned 24. That is crazy to me.
That is wild.
All right, next. Yusuf Nurkic, Seth Curry.
Oh, Seth Yusuf Curry's older? Nurkic.
He is by 4 years. I thought I might trick you with a big man. Seth Curry turning 31. Yusuf Nurkic turning 27. Next, Jeremy Lin, James Harden.
Oh, my. Okay.
Jeremy Lin, James Harden. We'll be talking about Jeremy Lin a little bit later.
Jeremy Lin is older?
He is by 1 year, turning 33 this week. James Harden, 32. I think you've aced it so far. Last one for the clean sweep, Jeff Green, Darren Collison.
I'll say Jeff Green's older.
He is a clean sweep. Jeff Green turning 35. Darren Collison, who may be coming back to the NBA, turning 34 this past week.
Nice. Nice. Wow. Okay. We'll be right back after this quick break. And after that, we're talking about the Knicks.
Discover the latest collections from David Yurman, as seen recently, styled on basketball stars like Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Green, D'Angelo Russell, and others. David Yurman is a celebrated American jewelry company inspired by the beauty of art, architecture, and the natural world. The story of David Yurman begins in New York City, with David, a sculptor, and his wife Sybil, a painter and ceramicist. When the artists began collaborating, their goal was to simply make beautiful, designed objects to wear. Over 40 years later, the Yurmans and their son, Evan, continue to redefine American luxury jewelry with timeless, modern collections for women and men defined by inspiration, innovation, consummate craftsmanship, and Cable, the brand's artistic signature. David Yurman's collections are available on davidyurman.com.
I'd like to welcome Jonathan Macri onto the show. He does a podcast and he writes for Knicks Film School. Jonathan, what's up?
Not much, guys. You know, it's the dog days of the NBA summer. So, you know, like you guys, between a podcast and a newsletter and everything, trying to come up with stuff to talk about in the meantime. So I guess might as well talk about the Knicks in early September, right?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, no, we are just making stuff up today.
Hey, listen, beg, borrow, or steal. That is what it is.
Yeah, that's right. So after such a successful regular season, they're 41-31, first time that they're above 500 since the 12-13 season. What are the expectations for Knicks fans for next season? And then like talk about the additions of Kemba and Evan Fournier and maybe how that would add to those expectations.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, before I say anything, generalizing Knicks fans in terms of just one umbrella is always a bit dangerous because I think like any fan base, but it's probably more exacerbated because there's so many of them. It's dangerous. But I would say most Knicks fans that I see have an expectation that they will be a better team. But like a lot of people have said, better team doesn't necessarily mean better record, higher seeding, any of those things. I think, you know, mid-40s in terms of wins, I think there are some Knicks fans out there who absolutely think they will again be in the running for home court advantage. I mean, personally, I think a 6 seed would be a success. You know, wouldn't be shocked if they were 7th or 8th. And I think in terms of your ceiling or your floor outcomes for this team, it's, you know, it's the guy you just said, it's Kemba Walker. If the Knicks are somehow getting the version of Kemba Walker that led the league in usage 2 years ago and, you know, earned himself that contract and that's, or they're getting, you know, 95% of that, then I think it's a very different conversation from if they're getting a guy who is going to play, you know, 60 games, 62 games, and then, you know, how effective is he going to be, you know, if you in the games he plays in. The thing that I will say is based on everything that I could tell from last year in Boston, when he was on the court, especially after the first 10 games or so that it took a little while to get going, I think he was pretty good. Maybe not the Kemba of 2, 3, 4 years ago, but pretty close. So I think as long as they get that guy for somewhere over 55 or so games, I think they'll be in good shape.
One of the remaining questions from the offseason is the possibility of giving Mitchell Robinson a rookie extension. Recent reports are that Leon Rose is open to extension as long as it's not crazy, was the quote. How big of a priority should extending Robinson be, and what do you think is a reasonable contract for him going forward?
I would say, so now you've hit on a topic that is absolutely divisive with Knicks fans, because don't get me wrong, we, as a Knicks fan community, we love Mitch. He is, because I think when you see, when you watch him every night, when he's been healthy, which obviously this season that was part of the issue, he could just do things that there aren't many centers in the league that are capable of doing. I think what's tough about it is I personally, and I don't know how you guys feel, I'd be curious to hear any thoughts you have, to read the center market in terms of like what is the value, the appropriate value, I should say, right, of a good to very good rim running, you know, shot blocking, you know, solid pick and roll coverage center. We obviously just saw the contract that Robert Williams got. I think most Knicks fans would be thrilled if they were able to get Mitchell Robinson on a similar contract for something in the 50s. But then, you know, the comp that I think a lot of people have been more than comfortable throwing around for him around these parts, at least over the years, has been Clint Capella. We just saw Clint Capella sign on for two more additional seasons at $23 million a year, which is obviously a lot more than the 12 he can sign for a year based on what the max is that New York could pay him at the moment. Personally, I am not anticipating an extension before the season. It would not shock me if this is the last season that Mitch is here. I know a lot of Knicks fans don't want to hear that, but just look at the lay of the land. They just got Noel for I think what we can consider a reasonable contract. And you look at the position. So I'm happy. I will be happy to be proven wrong on that one, though, because I think I still believe in Mitchell Robinson's ceiling. And I do think if he hits, and I don't think we've seen the fully approximated version of him yet, you're looking at a guy who, you know, is in that Jared Allen or maybe even higher level of like $20 million a year.
Yeah, that's just a lot to commit to a center that you're just like, yeah, maybe really he's this, maybe he's that. So yeah, that's a tough one. I would probably lean on like just waiting and seeing what happens with him before extending him, because a lot of mistakes are made, I feel like, with contract extensions like his in general.
Well, I mean, this front office, I don't know that we have a great like one word to define the Leon Rose regime, but in a lot of ways, they're really very conservative. Like if you look at, they did almost nothing their first time around. And then this summer, like, yes, they spent some money, but all the years, all the contracts were 2 years with the exception of Fournier, and you weren't getting Fournier for under three guaranteed seasons. They're taking a very market approach, and the notion that they were ever going to make Mitchell Robinson restricted and then have to match something in the 4 year, you know, $60+ million. I don't think that was ever something that they were like chomping at the bit to do. So I was not surprised that they did not go that route, and that they're like, you know what, you could play for us for $1.8 million this year. That sounds good to us, and we'll see what happens down the road.
Yeah. So Julius Randle is another just massive storyline for the Knicks. Yeah. He was great for the Knicks last year. All-NBA third team. He was posting a career high in points.
Second team.
Assists. He was second team?
He was second team. Yeah. Listen, I was just I think everybody around here, we were expecting third team because, like, you know, you figure like the legacy guys are going to get their spot, but no, second team.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. I stand corrected. Wow. Even more of a storyline than I even realized.
There
you
go.
Julius Randle.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Now they've got more offensive firepower around him. Like, how does his role evolve? Because he was like this offensive hub. Does he stay that? Like, what does his role look like?
I think it's the biggest question in terms of just on the court surrounding the Knicks this year. The interesting thing for me is in the middle portion of his career, Julius Randle was, I feel comfortable saying, one of the more devastating finishers in the entire NBA. If you factor in the volume of shots he finished at the rim, and I'm talking about specifically his last year in LA and the 1 year he was in New Orleans, how many shots he finished around the rim, and the accuracy that he had there, where he was in, you know, again, given the volume, there weren't a lot of big guys finishing, you know, shy. And they were like, we knew what he was. He was this bowling ball where if he got going downhill, he was going to be, he was going to be a tough force to stop. The last 2 years in New York, like, it's kind of gone as like a subtle, not really reported on thing. He hasn't been good around the rim. Like, I'm not saying he's been terrible, but his percentage, I mean, he's like in the bottom, like quarter, third of the league where factoring for position, if you go look on Cleaning the Glass, like the guy who used to finish at a high level didn't just disappear. New York spacing was awful two seasons ago. Last season was, it was better, but you were still dealing with like Elfrid Payton on the floor for a lot of Julius Randle's minutes. And they always played a traditional five. So I still think the version of Julius Randle that can be a finisher, that guy's in there somewhere. And I think with Kemba Walker on the team, again, it all goes back to Kemba when we're talking about New York this year. You know, that's the biggest question. Can that guy come out? We never really, I mean, the numbers with him and Rose were good, Randle and Rose. We never really saw them develop, in my opinion, a really solid two-man chemistry. He had that going with Reggie Bullock, on more on the perimeter. But in terms of like Rose feeding Randle for easier looks, that never really happened. I'm wondering, can he develop that with Kemba? I am wondering whether Tom Thibodeau will give us the one thing that a lot of fans have been clamoring for, including myself, give us some Randle at the five. Like, I know he can't protect the rim to save his life, but like,
right.
That could be really devastating. And the Knicks really did not go to it hardly at all last year. Went to it in desperation at the end of one playoff game, but that's really it. I'd like to see some more of that, especially since I think the Knicks have the personnel to really become a pretty devastating offensive unit if they went that route.
Yeah, interesting you bring that up, because one of the players I wanted to ask you about was Obi Toppin, who was kind of linked to Randle because of the minutes concern. You know, he's coming into his sophomore season. He had a pretty small role in his rookie year. Given the minutes that Randle will demand at the power forward position, like, how do you see Toppin getting more minutes in his second season?
It's a great question, and it's one that came up a lot when the Colin Sexton rumors. Remember that week, Colin Sexton?
Oh, yeah.
That was just so much fun. because everybody was like, all right, so you have to give up Toppin, no big deal. What is he going to get here, right? Where are the minutes going to come from? How is he going to find more than 14 minutes a game? I think the easy answer is, again, play one of them at the five and then find 5 to 10 minutes a game where they play together. I think Obi's really interesting because, you know, you can criticize him last season for a lot of different things, but one thing you can't say is that he was ever used in an ideal role. I mean, this is a guy who led the league in dunks his sophomore year at Dayton, and he was essentially asked to be a stretch four. And he would get, you know, a play or two, maybe a game where he'd be able to kind of get in his wheelhouse and try to make something happen. But it was more the exception than not the rule. In summer league, it's funny, like, it was still, you could tell, I mean, and he made, you know, summer, not for whatever it's worth, he made summer league like first team. Like, it's still a guy trying to figure out his way on the NBA level in terms of his whole offensive package, because there's not much he can't do from the four, putting the ball on the floor, finishing at the rim, finishing hard. He has like a weird, like, he has these little jump hooks and like he tried a floater at one point. I mean, like, these aren't things you see power forwards do. He could do a lot of that stuff, but again, where's the path to minutes? I'd like to see Julius play a little bit less. I mean, he obviously led the league in minutes last season. If maybe Tibbs, and again, sacrilegious word to associate with Tom Thibodeau, can be a little bit more conservative, maybe play Julius Randle something closer to like, I know it is actually laughable. Play him something closer to like 34, 32, 34 minutes a game. Maybe, God forbid, give him a night off every now and then. Just to get Obi up to like, you know, even 18 minutes a game, 18 to 20 minutes a game, play the two of them together a little bit. I think that can make such a huge difference. And if you're talking about obviously the Knicks long-term plans, like, great, RJ Barrett is coming along quickly. I think we saw some nice flashes. They need to increase the value of their young asset base if they eventually want to, you know, go and get the name that everybody's wondering, like, are they going to make a play for whoever that guy is? Because, you know, if they don't get some of these high pedigree young kids to get a, to take a step up in the eyes of the league at large, I mean, you're going to have a tougher time, you know, being able to get whoever that guy ends up being.
Yeah. That transitions well to our last question about RJ Barrett. He's really good last year. He shot better from three, is 40% overall, increases free throw percentages. But what are you looking for from him in year three? Like, what are the improvements that need to be done for him to be of value enough for like a Damian Lillard or Bradley Beal or whoever it is?
Or I just want to say before Knicks fans listening to this kill me, or just to be a part of the Knicks core for the next 5 to 10 years. There you go. Want to make sure I get that in there. I think you're looking for two things. I think you're looking for anything off the dribble around the perimeter. I think 98% of his threes were assisted last season. He had, you know, a couple where he would like take a dribble to the side and then shoot. But for the most part, it was, you know, just stand there, we'll get you the ball, and then you shoot. And he did great with that. And considering he was 32% as a rookie, that in and of itself, fine. He had a couple moments when he was with Team Canada, which I think were very encouraging for Knicks fans. He had a couple, you know, kind of pull-ups, if you believe in summer workout videos, which again, just take those as gospel, obviously. He's doing some more pull-up stuff in summer runs. Just some of that stuff. It doesn't need to be a lot, but just like show that that may be a part of your game moving forward. And then just finishing at the rim. I mean, like Randall, RJ has not been good around the rim. He got better. He was better last year than he was as a rookie, and he got better as the season went along. So I'm encouraged. And he would go through stretches where he'd have 5, 6, 7 games where it's like, wow, he's really figuring it out around the rim. And then another couple of weeks where it's like, these are just not good looks. And they just, you know, when a player puts up a shot around the rim, like, well, you're in OKC. So you like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander doesn't give you this concern because he's friggin' awesome around the rim. RJ would have stretches where it's just like, man, you're not loving the looks and they just look like unnatural. All that said, he's 21. I think he gets there. I think he's working with the right people. I think he has the work ethic. If you could give me those two things in small doses in year three, I think like that to me matters a lot more than the numbers. Like people are saying, oh, he's going to average 20 points and 5 assists and 7. Like, I don't care about that. Like if his usage even goes down a little bit with the additions, that's fine. Just show that you can do the things that you need to do to be able to be a, you know, I'm not asking him to be a primary. Nobody thinks he's going to be a primary. Be a really high-level secondary creator on your team. I think he could get there.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for answering our questions, but it is now time to test your Knicks knowledge on our weekly episode of Andrew versus the Beat, where Andrew goes head-to-head against a beat writer. In this case, Jonathan Macri from Knicks Film School. So how this works, Jonathan, there are 8 trivia questions, all loosely about the Knicks. You will give me a number between 1 and 8. If you get it right, you'll get 2 points. If you get it wrong, Andrew will have a chance to steal for 1 point. We'll go back and forth until all the questions have been asked and answered. So start us off with a number between 1 and 8.
Why don't we go with 8?
Number 8. There is only one Eastern Conference franchise that the Knicks have never faced in the NBA playoffs. Who is that team? And to give you a hint, you know, franchises sometimes change names, that would not count. You know, like if they played a team a long time ago that had a name and they changed it, that they played them. They played them. So this is a team that they've never played under any name from the Eastern Conference.
I'm going to go with the first answer that came to mind. And if I get this wrong, this is going to be pretty embarrassing. I'm going to go with the Orlando Magic.
Jonathan, that is correct for 2 points. Yeah. All right. Great start. Andrew, it is your turn.
Let's go number one.
Number one, my favorite question. Before he became a Hall of Famer as a member of the New York Knicks, Dave DeBuscher played in the MLB, where he once pitched a shutout for the Chicago White Sox. DeBuscher is one of the 13 players in NBA history to also play Major League Baseball. I'm going to give you the names of 5 athletes, Andrew. All of them played in both the NBA and the MLB except one, and you have to name the imposter, okay?
Oh, no.
Big baseball fan here, Andrew. Okay, so I'm going to give you five names. One of them never played in the NBA. Here we go.
Okay.
Dick Grote, Ed Head, Cotton Nash, Dick Ricketts, or Johnny G. Would you like me to reread those for you, Andrew?
Please.
Dick Grote, Ed Head, Cotton Nash, Dick Ricketts, or Johnny G. Who did not play in the NBA?
Cotton Nash.
Andrew, that is incorrect. You should know that. Cotton Nash, of course, played in the NBA. Jonathan, you have a chance to steal.
Can I ask a clarifying question? Johnny G, is that the letter G or is it G-E-E?
It is G-E-E. Johnny G.
Johnny G.
I'm going with Johnny G.
Johnny G. Well, unfortunately, it was Ed Head. Of course, Ed Head. Yeah, sorry about that. All right, we go back to Jonathan. He's up 2-0.
I'll go with question 5.
Question number 5. This season, Carmelo Anthony moved into the top 10 all-time for most points scored in NBA history. Yeah. Where does Carmelo rank in Knicks franchise history for most points scored? Now, for this question, I will give you 2 guesses. So you could say, like, oh, he ranks second, and I will say yes or no. If you get it wrong, you'll get one more shot at it. This is where Carmelo ranks in Knicks franchise history. Most points scored.
He's either just outside the top 5 or just outside the top 10. So let me go 6th first as my first guess.
6th? That is incorrect, but you get one more guess.
All right, I'll go with my gut here. Is he 11th?
That is also incorrect. Andrew, you have a chance to steal, but you only get one guess, Andrew. Only one guess for you.
Oh, wow. I have no idea.
Why would you?
I don't know. I have no idea, Al. Thanks, man. I'll go 7. I don't know.
Andrew, that is absolutely correct.
I knew it.
Carmelo Anthony ranks 7th. Oh, no. Jonathan was off by 1. Andrew has pulled back. It is now 2-1. And Andrew, it is your turn. Hold on. I've been forgetting to mark off questions. There we go.
Let's go with number 3.
Number 3. 6 different players shot at least 40% from 3 for the Knicks last season. And we're going to try to name them all. Now, how this works, Andrew, you'll give me a name of someone who shot over 40%. Then Jonathan, you'll give me a name. We'll go back and forth until one of you stumbles. And as a clarifying point, minimum of 48 attempts. So who would you like to start off with, Andrew? 6 different players shot at least 40% from 3.
Oh, boy. Let's go with R.J. Barrett.
R.J. Barrett is correct. Over to Jonathan.
I just want to clarify, it's 40% for the year or 40% for the year with the Knicks?
40% for the year with the Knicks.
Okay. I'll do an easy one. Reggie Bullock.
Reggie Bullock, that is correct. Back to Andrew.
Julius Randle.
Julius Randle, also correct. Back to Jonathan. You've gotten 3 of the 6.
Derrick Rose.
Derrick Rose is correct. Back to Andrew.
Oh, boy. Did Alec Burks do it?
Alec Burks did do it. Now, I did not expect you guys to get all of these names. I don't know what I'm going to do. If Jonathan gets this correct, the final name, the guy who shot at least 40% from three.
And it's 48 makes or 48 attempts?
48 attempts. Minimum of 48 attempts.
There's no way he took 48 attempts. I know quickly did not do it. Man, was Austin Rivers here for long? I don't even know if he shot about 40 some odd percent. I should know this because we had a similar question on our show recently. Shit, it could actually be Kevin Knox. I shouldn't curse. I am. Because the 48 attempts, I'm actually going to say Kevin Knox.
That was a great guess, but it is unfortunately incorrect. It was, of course, Frank Ntilikina.
He shot 48. Was it 48 on the nose?
It was 48 exact.
I was like, I'm going through my head. I'm like, there's no way he got enough playing time to shoot 48 threes. And then, of course, he did. Okay. Wow.
All right. Andrew, you are now up 3-2. Jonathan, it is your turn.
Oh, goodness. I'm on the verge of embarrassing myself here. Let's go number seven.
Number seven. Who was the last Nick to make all-rookie first team?
The last Nick to make all-rookie first team.
First team.
Was Hernan Gomez.
That is correct. I thought that was the hardest question. Willie Hernan Gomez was the last Nick to make all-rookie first team.
Yeah, no, that's... All right, yeah, the long live
great pull. All right, Jonathan, you're now up 4-3. Andrew, what a battle we have here.
Number four.
Who led the Knicks in total dunks last season with 84?
Oh man,
this is actually not easy. Mm.
Total dunks last season with 84.
Oh boy, 84 is. I would just guess Mitchell Robinson.
That is correct. I tried to trip you up because he only played 31 games, but he still led the Knicks in most dunks, barely beating out Nerlens Noel. Oh. Okay, it is now Andrew 5, Jonathan 4. It is Jonathan's turn. We have two questions left: number 2 and number 6.
Let's go 6.
The Trent Tucker rule, named after a Knicks player, is a rule established in 1990 stating that a regular shot will be disallowed if the ball is put into play with under 0.3 seconds remaining. The rule only disallows regular shots, however, and in 2006, this Knick made a game-winning shot off an inbounds play with 0.1 seconds left on the clock. Who was it?
This is my guess?
It is, yes.
David Lee.
That is correct. I figured that'd be an easy one for a Knicks fan. So that brings us to the last question. Now, we've never had this happen. Andrew, if you get this right, you will win by 1 point. If you get it wrong, you will lose. Here we go. Final question. The night before his breakout performance against the New Jersey Nets in 2012, Jeremy Lin told reporters that he had been sleeping on this teammate's couch because he was still on a non-guaranteed deal. Who was the teammate?
Oh, man. Is this Channing Frye?
No.
That is incorrect. Who is it, Jonathan?
It's long live. I also believe he may have made all-rookie first team, Landry Fields.
Landry Fields, Andrew. So Andrew goes down. Jonathan wins 7-5. What a game we had.
Oh, wow. That was a good one. I thought I would get stomped way worse than that, though.
No, that was the Frank stands are going to get on me about not realizing that Frank took 48 attempts from deep last season. So
oh man, Jonathan, thanks so much for joining the show. Go follow Jonathan on Twitter. Go check out all of his stuff. Check out his podcast. He's got a really good Knicks podcast. If you're not listening to it, you should go listen to it. Knicks Film School. Easy to find on Apple, Spotify, all that stuff. Jonathan, thanks so much, man.
Thanks so much for having me on, guys. I had a lot of fun.
All right, Andrew, well, it is once again time to spin the wheel of fandom. We have 10 teams remaining. I've added the Nuggets back in. I had removed them briefly because I didn't think they were interesting enough after the draft, but they've been added back in, so we could get the Nuggets now. But we have the Spurs, Pacers, Hornets, Blazers, Raptors, Grizzlies, Lakers, Nuggets, Rockets, Magic. I would love to be talking Blazers in 2 weeks. I think that'd be a fun one. But let's see what we get. Let's spin the wheel of fandom. Who will it be? It will be the Memphis Grizzlies.
Ooh, wow, boy. Gotta have our guy Keith Parrish on the show to talk Grizzlies. Maybe some trades. They made lots of trades, actually, surprisingly, during this offseason. So take the temperature of the team, see where they're at, and there's really nobody better than Keith Parrish. So, Keith, if you're listening, you're going to be on the show, whether you like it or not. thanks so much for listening to the Saturday Slam and Jam. This may be dropping on a Friday, but you can also choose to listen to it on a Saturday. Totally up to you. Hope you guys have a great weekend. We'll see you guys again in 2 weeks. We'll not be on next week. Remember, we're on every other week up until the start of the NBA season. So be on the lookout for us in 2 weeks. Until then, make sure you're tuning in to all the shows on the Athletic NBA Show. We have a great variety of shows. We're also experimenting a little bit with the Daily Ding on the Athletic NBA Show feed. So give that a listen and give us some feedback. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you guys again in 2 weeks.